We are holding on your Dalet Amud Beis, 9 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about the order of Nevi'im when you're writing them as one large scroll. Now we're going to continue with the continuation of the same Braisa, which continues with the proper order of Ksuvim. Sidran Shel Ksuvim. The order of Ksuvim is as follows. Again, this is not the order you'll find in a typical printed Tanakh, but this is how it's supposed to be if you're writing it as a scroll, as one large scroll. The order is Rus, V'Sefer Tehillim, V'Iyov, Mishle, Kehelas, Shirashirim, V'Kinais, meaning Eicha, Daniel, Megillas Esther, Ezra, V'Divrei Hayom. Ezra, by the way, includes Nehemiah, and now it's one of those things also just like the Goyim split up Shmuel and Malachim, and Divrei Hayom, and they also split up Ezra and Nehemiah into two separate named books, but really they're originally one book.
We keep it in one book.
Again, when you have a handwritten scroll, then yes, it'll be one book in printed Tanakh,
what
just like
they had, call it.
It was all called Ezra. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Nehemiah lost the privilege to have it named after him for reasons which we'll discuss there. We'll learn there in Chelak Beis Hashem. Actually, it's interesting now that we're mentioning it. The Chidah mentions an idea. He says the fact of the matter is we do have in all our printed Tanakh nowadays we do have a separate portion called after Nehemiah. He says maybe whatever it is that the Gemara describes over there, why Nehemiah lost that privilege, maybe already enough time has passed, so therefore he can get it back, kind of. Anyway. Okay, so those are the 11.
Correct.
So those are the 11. No. So those are the 11 books of Ksuvim. The basic reason behind it is, again, it's Rashi says it's more or less chronological. Ruth comes before Tehillim because Ruth was during the time of the Shoftim, and David is her descendant. Eov, we'll see, the Gemara will discuss why Eov comes where it is. Mishle, Kehelas, and Shashurim were all written by Shlomo HaMelech. Rashi says he thinks that Shashurim is last because Shlomo HaMelech wrote it in his old age. There's actually a few different opinions in the Medrash what the order was in which he wrote the Sfarim. There's a different opinion that he wrote Shashurim first. But still, Rashi also mentions Mishle and Kehelas are both books of Chachma, and therefore it's more logical also to put them together with Eov, which is also, in fact, they're all philosophical books, kind of. Okay, so Shirashirim. Then you have, next after that comes Eicha, which is at the end of the first Beis Mikdash. Yirmiyahu wrote it. Daniel, which is during Galus Bavel. Esther, which is towards the end after the Persians took over. Ezra and Divrei. Ezra is
called.
It is.
Esther was before
Esther. No, Esther is after Eicha. Eicha is about the Churban. Actually, Yirmiyahu wrote it a few years before the Churban with Ruach HaKodesh. Esther is much later. Esther is towards the end of Galus Bavel, towards the end of the 7 years of Galus. And then, so in between comes Daniel. Then Ezra comes after Esther, because Ezra describes...
the first Korban.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. This is all the first Korban.
Eicha
is also the first Korban.
First Korban.
Yeah. So Ezra then takes up with the events of the early period of the second Beis Hamikdash, and Divrei Hayamim is a summary of history. Hello, from the beginning, from Adam Arishon all the way until the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, it goes in that order. So the Gemara asks, "Lamanda Amar Iyah B'Mei Moshe Hayah." Now, according to the opinion, which actually is the continuation of this Braisa, says that later, according to the opinion that Iyah lived in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. And in fact, the Braita is going to go on to say that Moshe wrote Sefer Iyov, then the question is, Liftimei le'Iyov Bereisha. Why shouldn't Iyov be first? It comes even before Rus then. Rus is during the time of the Shoftim, and yet. The answer is, Aschul v'Puranus aloim aschalinen, because we do not want to begin a whole section of Tanakh, but to begin it with Ksuvim, with a story of tragedy, of punishment, which Iyov is all, most of it, the body of the Sefer, is all the troubles that Iyov had.
Question. Well, Moshe would have written that Sefer before he even... that the burning bush.
So there's different opinions. If we're saying that Moshe wrote it, that Ramban says it still means Hashem dictated it to him. Only the Torah is dictated word for word, but that Hashem gave him Hashem inspired him to write it, and he wrote it with Ruach HaKodesh. There's different other possibilities. There's an interesting idea that some people say that maybe he wrote it before the Yidden even came out of Mitzrayim, that he wrote it in order to encourage them. But look, the story of Iyov, you see all the troubles he had and how he came out of it with his Amunah and Hashem more or less intact, as we will learn over the next couple of days. So therefore, it was meant to encourage them. Okay. Anyway. Question is, Rus Nami Poron, see? Okay, but Rus also begins with tragedy. It begins with a famine and Elimelech and his sons dying, etc. The answer is Poronos Yisrael Achris. Yes, but it's a Puranas that has a good ending.
Not just a happy ending.
Eeyore also has a happy ending because it ends off that he got back everything that he lost, even double. But the difference is Mephoshim say with Rus the tragedy directly the happy ending, the fact that Rus is the ancestress of David, would never have happened without the tragedy, without the family going to Moab and Elimelech and his son dying over there and Rus coming back with Naomi. None of this would have, it's part of the story, as opposed to Eeyore. Fine, he came out of it good after all, but it didn't have to be that he had the tragedy wasn't a necessary part of his restoration later.
Eeyore was a real or a fictitious character?
That's Bob and Aleph. We'll talk about it. We'll get to it.
Fictitious.
We'll see. Relax. Okay, so Puranas Deis La'Achas. The Amr Rabbi Yochanan, as in fact Rabbi Yochanan says, Lama Nikra Shma Rus, why was her name called Rus? Part of the question is why, part of the question some of the Mephoshim say is that if that was her Goyish name, why'd she keep it when she became a Gioris? Why didn't she change her name? Anyway, she yotze b'menu David. The reason is because David descended from her. She rivahu la'kadosh baruch hu b'shiras v'tishbachos, who satisfied rivahu meloshen Rus the Eivishter with songs and praises. So therefore, we see that Rus is directly connected to David, and therefore it's appropriate that it should come first. Even though it begins with Puranas, because it's a Puranas that led to a happy ending, that led to the existence of David HaMelech. Tosfos also points out that's why we have Rus and then Tilim. That's why we don't put Eeyore. Fine, we said we don't want to begin with the Puranas of Eeyore, but we don't put it immediately after Rus because Rus and Tilim are related thematically. Okay. Now let's start. So we talked about the order of Nevi'im and the order of Ksuvim. Now let's deal with who wrote the various Sfarim of Tanakh. Moshe Kosef Sifrei. Moshe wrote his own Sfarim, meaning Chamusha Chomshe Torah, by the Eibishter's dictation. Uparshas Bilam, and he also wrote the Parsha of Bilam. Now, what does that mean? The Parsha of Bilam is most of the Parsha's Balak. It's in the Torah. What are we talking about? So Rashi says it means like this. Even though it's not essentially necessary for what Moshe is teaching us, it's not directly related to the history of the Jewish people and the Torah and whatever, nevertheless, it still included the whole story of Bilam, the whole story of how he wanted to curse the Yidden. It's not really Rashi uses the expression. It's not Soche Moshe v'Terosa v'Seder Maisev. It's not directly related to the story of Moshe and what he accomplished and the Torah that he taught. And so forth.
But the Torah is not a book of history.
No, but nevertheless, basically the Torah is meant to tell us, the Torah is telling us the history of the Jewish people and the mitzvahs that were given them through Moshe, etc. So there's a lot of different explanations also. The Ritva says that it means that Parshas Bilam over here doesn't mean the actual, what we have written in the Torah. It means there was a longer version of the whole story with many more details that Moshe wrote as a separate sefer. Now it's lost. All we have is the excerpts of it that are in the Torah. That according to that, that's what it means.
Because that's really understood.
Yeah.
It's referenced here
in Masoros Hashas. The Shaloh HaKadosh explains like this. Okay, Bilam said all these nevuos. So how do we have them in our Torah? How did Moshe get them to record them in the Torah? You would think Moshe heard of them, the way that a person hears or learns something from his Rebbe and whatever and writes it down. No, Moshe wrote it as something, he received it independently from Hashem, independent of the fact that Bilam is a great Navi, in fact, in a certain level, on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe received it as an independent thing of his own. And in fact, the Shalosh says it's one of those kinds of things that by right would have been given to Moshe, but because Bilam had to be on a certain level, the equal of Moshe, therefore it came into the world through him. But it was still given independently to Moshe, and that's what we mean over here.
By
that's what we mean by Hashem directly, and therefore that's what we mean over here by Parshas Bilam. Right. Yeah,
like
exactly. He's right. Like the nice Slavchad, like we'll learn later on in our Masechta.
Everything.
In other words, the point is the dinim of Yerusha. In the Torah we have the flaming story for them is that the nice Slavchad came and said we need our father's inheritance, and therefore it was written in the Torah. The Gemara says later, if it hadn't been for the nice Slavchad, we wouldn't have the dinim of Yerusha. We'd still have them. They would have been given to Moshe like every other mitzvah. They had the schus that it was written down that it came about through their demands or that they're for their father's inheritance. So this is a similar kind of thing.
The nurse
Pasha was dictated by the Abish still. So.
Indeed, but the point is, if B'nai's Plachot hadn't come up and asked the question, then the Abish would have said, by Dabash Moshe Lamer, Ishki Yomos Abena Inlay, etc. It would have been like this. The fact that it's written in connection with B'nai's Plachot is to their credit. They're the ones who took the initiative, and therefore the Abish answered with a
mitzvah. Preordained.
It was preordained, but this that it's written down and the way it is, this that came about and the way it is to their credit. Similarly over here, because Bilam was a great Navi, and therefore it had to be done through him, therefore it was done through him. But if not, it still would have been given directly to Moshe, and that's what we mean over here. Okay, onward. The Iyov, and then also Moshe wrote Sefer Iyov. Yoshua Kosev Sifra, Yoshua wrote his own Sefer Yoshua, with Shmona Psukim Shabbat Torah, as well as the last 8 Psukim in the Torah, which describe Moshe's Tekira and burial and so forth. We'll deal with that more on the next Amud. Shmuel Kosev Sifra, Veshoftim Berus, Shmuel wrote Sefer Shmuel, as well as Sefer Shoftim, which summarizes Jewish history from Yoshua's Tekira until his own time, and Ruth. David Kosev Sefer Tilim, Idea Soros Genim, David wrote Sefer Tilim by means of, meaning that he incorporated things from Ten's Canaan. Well, the Psukim beginning by Yomos Shom Moshe, the last 8 Psukim of the Torah. We'll talk about it soon. David wrote Sefer Tilim Ideas Soros Canaan using the contributions of Ten's Canaan. Ide Odom Rishon, Rashi explains that Kapitel Kuf Lamed Tes has Psukim in it that refer to Adam's creation. He's the only one who could have said such Psukim, so therefore that Kapitel was said by him. Now, many of these Kapitel have captions on them in the Tillim that we have that say, Lamaseach Mizmor David or whatever. It means David rewrote it. It means David took what Adam wrote and rewrote it in it or modified it or whatever in his own style or whatever, and therefore... But
it wasn't dictated to him by the
Well, no... None of Nevi'im and Ksukim was dictated by the Eibishter word for word anyway. That's what Chumash is. Chumash was dictated by the Eibishter to Moshe. I mean, Nevi'im is the Eibishter showed them a Nevuah, in a vision or whatever, and they wrote it down in their own words. Ksukim is they wrote it with Ruach HaKodesh. Tillim is part of Ksukim. But here, so Adam wrote a kapitel in his times, and then David adapted it into his own style or whatever. Vayde Malki Tzedek, then there was Malki Tzedek from Avraham Avinu's times, that's kapitel Kuf Yud. Vayde Avraham, we'll explain later that one of the kapitel Peitet is captioned Maskel Eisan HaEzrafi, and the Gemara is going to say later that Eisan is Avraham. Vayde Moshe, Trilol Moshe, Kerem, those 11 kapitlach from Tzadik Tzukuf. Vayde Haman, you have a kapitel Peitet begins Maskel LaHaman HaEzrafi. Vayde Dusun, you have a couple of kapitlach that have Yedusun in the caption. Vayde Osaf, you have a bunch of kapitlach. Haman and Yedusun were Levim. The simple meaning that the Gemara is saying over here is that they were Levim who sang in the Beis Mikdash. They're mentioned in Divrei Hayamim when it describes the Levim who had various jobs in the Beis Mikdash. It mentions them. Ayudei means through them. In other words, he used their contribution. They wrote these kapitlach with Ruach HaKodesh, and David incorporated them into Tehillim. Vayidei Dusan, there's also, I mean, Rashi in some other places talks about that, on the Psukim, Rashi explains in some of these places that Yudusan is not actually the name of a person, but rather it means al-Dosis, that these are kapitlach that are written to complain about the persecutions that the Goyim do to us, in which case, okay, but here we see over here from our Gemara that we're talking Yudusan as the name of a person. Vayidei Osaf, now you have Osaf, one of the descendants of Korach, who you find his name in the caption of a number of kapitlach. Vayde Shlosha b'nei Korach and the 3 sons of Korach. Tosfos deals over here with a couple of different gear sites and a couple of different possibilities. Osaf over here we're saying that you have Osaf and you have the 3 sons of Korach. Or is it the same person? That we know from the Torah, from Parshas Shmos, Korach had 3 sons, Asir, Okana, and Avi Yosef. Maybe Avi Yosef is the same Osaf over here, in which case you have to take him out and maybe put in Shlomo. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe Osef is a later descendant of Korach, and then besides that, you have the 3 sons of Korach. Lamnateach, Livnei Korach, Maskil, and then another such kapitlach. Okay. Next, Yirmiyah Kosev Sifra. Yirmiyah wrote his own Sefer Yirmiyah, the Sefer Melachim. He also wrote Melachim, because he's at the end of that period, so he wrote it all down. The Kinos, and he wrote Megillat Eicha. Chizkiyah V'Sayate Kosev, Chizkiyah and his group, meaning Rashi says the people of his generation, the Chachamim of his generation, who outlived him, they wrote the following, King Chizkiyah and Siyata. So Rashi explains like this.
Who was that?
Siyata means the Chachamim of his time. Rashi explains the main thing is credited to Chizkiyah because he was the one who brought it about that there was a tremendous revival of learning Torah. Famous thing in Sanhedrin that he put a sword in front of the Beis Medrash and announced that anybody who doesn't come to learn Torah deserves to be stabbed with it. that it's a matter of national security. They need to, you know. But anyway, there's
always judges who can stop it.
The point is that in before Chizkiyahu's times, there was a neglect of learning Torah. Chizkiyahu revived it. So therefore, this is credited to him, and therefore Sayate means the other Chachamim of his time who outlived him. They're the ones who wrote the following four Sforim. Yamshak Simon is Yeshaya Mishle Sheashirim B'Kehelas. Yeshaya, so Rashi explains what it is usually a Navi would usually only write his Sefer at the end of his life, once he's done saying all of his Nevuos. Yeshaya was killed by Menashe, the Gemara tells that we learned in Yavamas. Therefore, he didn't have a chance to write his own Sefer. Therefore, Siyate, not Chizkiyahu himself, because he had passed away by that point, but Siyate, the other Chachamim, who were contemporaries of Chizkiyahu and outlived him, they compiled together Yeshaya's Nevuos into the Sefer Yeshaya that we have now.
How did they compile it?
Because they took the Yeshaya, evidently, had written down his Nevuos at various times, and then they compiled it. He had to have written them down, he just didn't write them into an official Sefer. They compiled them into an official Sefer. Mishle, Sheashirim, and Kehelas is also, they come from Shlomo HaMelech, like we said before, but they were edited and compiled together by Chizkiyahu v'Siyata. There's actually in Mishle, there's a pasuk that says Gam Eila Mishle Shloima Asher Etiku Chizkiyah. The last part of Mishle consists of things that Chizkiyahu and his group assembled from records that they had. Okay.
Wow. Good thing they did that.
Yeah. Next. Anshe Knesset Gdolah Kostu. The Anshe Knesset Gdolah wrote the following four Sfarim. Kandag Simen, Yechezkel, or Shneim Oser, Trey Oser, Daniel, or Megillat Esther. Rashi says basically the reason for those four is because they were in Chutz La'aretz. So Rashi says apparently you can't write Nevuah in Chutz La'aretz. So Yechezkel lived in Chutz La'aretz. Almost all of his Nevuahs took place in Babel. Therefore, he couldn't write it. Therefore, Anshe Knesset Gdolah allowed to do it. Shneim Oser is the last of them, Achagis, Chavya, and Malachi. So therefore, the Anshe Knesset Gdolah put all of it together, all 12 of them together. Daniel also lived in Chutz La'aretz. And Megillat Esther, they also lived in Chutz La'aretz. Tosfos asks the question: Yirmiyahu also Lachora passed away in Chutz La'aretz. So why was he able to write his sefer? So there's different possibilities about it. Maybe at the end of his life, the Noda Yehuda brings in one of his trovas from somebody who wants to say that maybe at the end of his life he made it back to Israel. The Noda Yehuda doesn't agree with that. Other Mephoshim give other answers that maybe since most of Yirmiyahu's nevuos took place in Eretz Yisrael, fine, he's allowed to add the little bit that was done afterwards in Chutz La'aretz. To write an official sefer of Tanakh, which actually Megillat Esther is an interesting one because Megillat Esther itself says that Mordechai and Esther wrote it, Lachora, while they were living in Shushan. The vort is there's a historical explanation from the sefer Derus HaRishonim that Megillat Esther was written in stages. Most of it was written originally by Mordechai as a letter to the Jewish people, informing them of the events in Persia, but not as part of Tanakh, just as a letter to inform them of what happened and that they should celebrate Purim. And then then you have the remainder part of it, the last dozen or so of Sukkim that describe how the Yom Tov of Purim was established. Those were added by the Anshe Knesset Gdolah, and then it was made. And there was a Revel Soloveitchik has an explanation on that also, that basically there's two different purposes for which Megillat Esther was written. One, to remember the Nesset Purim, and that it should be read every year, but that in and of itself didn't make it one of the Kisvei HaKodesh. Then a separate thing was to make it one of the Kisvei HaKodesh, one of the 24 books of Tanakh. That, it took the Anshe Knesset Gdolah, once they're back in Eretz Yisrael, to do. And again, according to Derus HaRishonim, at the time, they also added the last few stuff in the bit. Okay.
Why did they make it an official book of Tanakh?
Because that's the Gemara says in Megillah, that Esther asked for that. Esther specifically asked it for that. Kisvuni L'Dorus, write it down as something that should exist for all time as part of Tanakh. And originally they disagreed with her, and eventually they ended up agreeing that it's the right thing to do. Okay. Fine. Ezra Kosef Sifrei. Right? Ezra wrote his own Sefer Ezra, and as we said before, also Nehemiah. The Yachas Shel Divrei Yomim Adloi. He also wrote the Yichus of Divrei Yomim. The first part of Divrei Yomim is lists of genealogies of various families of the Jewish people. So he wrote his Yichus Adloi up until him. So Rashi says it means until he wrote his own Yichus. Tosfos brings an explanation that it means until a pasuk about three quarters of the way through Divrei Yomim that begins V'loy Achim B'nei Yoshapa. Either way, though, it also includes already the part that has his own Yichus. Marsha explains that what it means is you don't actually find Ezra's own Yichus in Divrei Yomim. You find it only in his own, only in Sefer Ezra. But what it means is in Divrei Yomim you find the genealogy of the Kohenim Gdolim from Aaron all the way down to Seroya, who was Ezra's father. So in that case, Marshall says that's what it means, ad loy. He wrote down his whole genealogy up till and including his father, but not including himself. And only then, himself, he left for Sefer Yoshua. Messiah loy l'Rav, which in that case, that explanation supports what Rav says. Da'amar Rav, Ezra did not come up from Bavel, Teretz Yisrael, before he had written down his Yichus, before he had written down his own genealogy, and only then did he go up Teretz Yisrael, because the Shechina only rests on the Miyuchasim of the Jewish people, as we learned in Kedushin. So therefore, he wanted to make sure that his Yichus is impeccable. So first he wrote that, and then he came up Teretz Yisrael. Uman Aske, okay, who finished up the rest of Divrei Hayamim? Nechemya ben Chachalia. So, Nehemiah was the same Nehemiah, the one who rebuilt the walls of Yerushalayim, who was the king's cupbearer, etc. Yeah.
So according to this Sefer,
Nehemiah was written by Ezra, right. Now, Sefer Nehemiah is, the part that we call Nehemiah nowadays is written in first person, and there are Mephoshim who say that the Man Aske refers to that also. It means Sefer Ezra, it means that according to that, Ezra wrote the first part of Sefer Ezra, the one that, and then Nehemiah wrote the rest, which we nowadays call Sefer Nehemiah. Okay.
Right. Today we cannot verify the Yichus of
No, indeed, all our Kohenim nowadays are Kohen Chazaka, yeah.
So how do we know if the Shekhinah is dwelling with us or not?
The Shekhinah dwells with, anytime 10 Jews are together, the Shekhinah dwells with them anyway. The Altadeva brings in a Geras Chof Gimel, that the Mizrach Magid said that even a Malach would be bottle in the face of the level of Shekhinah that descends on 10 Jews when they're together for any purpose, even not learning Torah.
Even if they're not Miyuchasim,
yeah. Well, here we're talking about individuals. Fine. Omar. Okay, so thus far the Braisa, now let's start analyzing it. We said in the Braisa, Yeshua Kotev Sifra Ushmoina Psukim Shabbat Torah. We said that Yeshua wrote Sefer Yeshua, as well as he wrote the last 8 Psukim in the Torah. Well, Tanya Kamando Ushmoina Psukim Shabbat Torah Yeshua Kotev. That means this Braisa agrees with the opinion that Yeshua wrote the last 8 Psukim in the Torah, which is in fact a Machloikis. The Tanya, we learn in the Braisa, the Pasuk says, the 8th to last Pasuk of the Torah says, Vayomas Shom Moshe Eved Hashem, does Moshe, the servant of Hashem, die there? You have to ask Ephraim Moshe Mace of the cult of Vayomas Shom Moshe, how is Moshe dead already in writing Vayomas Shom Moshe? Ella, Abkan cult of Moshe, no. So you have to say, up until that point Moshe wrote, until that point, meaning until the end of the previous Pasuk.
Right.
From then on, that the remaining 8 Psukim Yeshua wrote. So Rabbi Yehuda, or some say Rabbi Nehemiah said that.
He could have written this Pasuk with Nevuah.
But still, you have Nevuah, but you don't write something untrue in Nevuah. You can't say Vayomas Shom Moshe if he's still alive. So, Omer Lo Rav Shimon, so Rav Shimon says, what are you talking about? Epsha Sefer Torah Chosu Oitz Achas. How can you be that your Sefer Torah, and the Torah itself calls it a Sefer Torah, and it should be missing one letter? Uchdiv L'Koyach HaSefer HaTorah Azeh. The Ebishter tells Moshe, take this Sefer Torah, and give it to the Levim, implying that it was a complete Sefer Torah at that point. And Yeshua and Moshe was still alive
before he passed away.
So how could it be missing those 8 of him? Ella, no. So Rav Shimon says like this, Ad kan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer U'Moshe Omer V'Kosev. Up until this point, the Eibishter would dictate and Moshe would repeat the words back and then write it down. Hagoyt HaBach takes out the second Omer, that just the Eibishter would dictate and Moshe would write down. The halacha is actually when a sofer is writing a Sefer Torah, and I think also Tefillin Mezuzahs, he is supposed to say each word before he writes it down. That comes from our Gemara. So you look in the original Sefer Torah, Bereshis, you say Bereshis, and then you write Bereshis. I think so, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so up until that point, that's how it would work. The Eibishter dictates to Moshe. Moshe repeats it back and writes it down.
How do you understand Rabbi Shimon's objection? Because Rabbi Shimon's objection, when the Rebbe Shimon says, the Sefer Torah is there, presumably that line wasn't there. So how could it be a Sefer Torah?
No, there's no problem to write...
Why not?
The Ebishter tells him Lakayach Sefer HaTorah Azeh. Moshe writes that down, and then he gives the Torah to them. Once he finishes writing down a Sefer HaTorah Azeh, yeah. But the question here. So, Mikan ve'elach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Moshe Kosev B'demo. From this point on, these last 8 Psukim, the Ebishter still dictated them, but Moshe wrote them down B'demo. Bedema, the simple meaning of it means with tears, which leads Mephoshim to various possibilities. It means he was crying as he wrote it, or he means he wrote it with tears instead of ink. Ben Yoyada actually has an interesting take on it. He says it means there's a day that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away on Shabbos. Minat Torah, you're only chayev for write. You're only also to write on Shabbos with something permanent. If you were to write with tears or whatever, it wouldn't be considered writing because it's not permanent. So therefore, at this time, we can say the gzera to do that hadn't yet, the gzera chachamim not to do that hadn't yet been established. So Moshe can write with tears. After Shabbos, Yeshua went and wrote it over with ink.
How could the Yiddish dictate on Shabbos?
Why not? You can dictate on Shabbos. Again, if you're allowed to, Minat Torah, to write with tears on Shabbos, then Moshe can do that. Anyway, there's also a very interesting explanation, a very well-known explanation that's brought from the Vilna Gaon and also from various other people, that bedema means mixed up. We know the famous thing, kol ha-Torah kol ha-shmoyz of Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that really all the whole Torah consists of names of the Eibishter, and those letters that make up names of the Eibishter are arranged into words that we understand as telling us various stories and various mitzvahs
really,
and words. But really, in other words, what it is then, so the Eibishter tells Moshe to write down these eight psukim with the letters mixed up, not in a form that we would recognize as the words Vayomos Shom Moshe, but rather just as names of Hashem, and then afterwards they were unscrambled into the words that we know. Moshe, so that therefore it was all complete, all the letters were there. Then by the way, I want to talk about in Asicha, that a deeper reason why the Eibishter tells Moshe to write Vayomos Shom Moshe, according to this opinion, is Moshe himself is hoping that when the Jewish people see it's written down in the Torah for all time by Yom HaShem Moshe, they will storm the heavens and storm Shemayim to prevent it from actually happening in the plain sense that Moshe should actually die. It should happen in a more ruchniistic sense, that Moshe should lose his something of his high level or whatever, but once it becomes part of the Torah, that they should realize this is serious business, we got to do something about it. But they didn't. And we see this idea of that the Rav dictates and the Talmud writes down. As we find with Baruch ben Neriah describing how Yirmiyahu dictated to him Sefer Eicha, he says, Yirmiyahu said to me verbally all of these words, and I wrote it down on the scroll with ink. So we see this idea that the Nabi dictates and his scribe writes it down. So here with the Torah, it was the same thing. The Eibishter dictates and Moshe writes it down. Fine. So we have these two opinions. Who wrote the last eight psukim? Is it Yeshua or is it Moshe writing it at the Eibishter's dictation? With tears or mixed up or whatever. Okay. We have a statement that Rabbi Yeshua Ba'aba Omer of Gidol Omer Rav, Shmoyna psukim Shabbat Torah Yochid Kora Oysan. The last eight psukim of the Torah, a Yochid reads them. So what does that mean? The many different explanations among Rishonim. Rashi says it means you have to have one Oyla read them. You cannot interrupt for an Aliyah break in the middle of those eight psukim. The Tosfos says it means usually you have the Baal Kodeh lanes and the Oyla lanes along quietly with him. Here you should just have the Oyla say it himself. Well, everybody stands also. That's also not for the eight psukim. No, they're just for the last stand of it for Chazak. That's for the end of it, for Chazak, everybody stands, and that's a different meaning. There's a number of other explanations that Rambam says, an interesting one, which the Ravid argues on, that it means these eight psukim do not have to be read with a minion. If you don't have a minion, and sure, you're still able to read, unlike usually, you need a minion for Kriyas HaTorah, the Rambam says these eight psukim are an exception. Yeah. Okay, anyway, there's a number of other, another one is that a yochid means a tamid chacham, and therefore it means Tamar Chacham should be given. Okay, so if we're saying that these eight psukim constitute a unit of their own, Lema Rabbi Yehuda, he would like it of Shimon. Should we say that works only according to Rabbi Yehuda, that these eight psukim were written by Yeshua, and therefore they're different than the rest of the Torah that was written by Moshe, and not like Rabbi Shimon? The answer is no. I feel a tamer of Shimon. No, you could answer that this statement, this din, goes even according to Rabbi Shimon. However, ishtinu, because after all, there is a distinction between them. They were written with tears, or mixed up, or whatever, instead of in the usual way like the rest of the Torah. Therefore, we can say that they have a different din than the rest of the Torah as far as this din of an aliyah for them.
Yeah, but that's
the point. In other words, we don't have to say that they're different because Yeshua wrote them. We can say they're different because they were dictated to Moshe and Moshe wrote them down in a different way than the rest of the Torah.
With tears.
Yeah. Next. The Braisa said Yeshua cost of Sefer. He said that Yeshua wrote his own Sefer. What do you mean Yeshua wrote his own Sefer? Vayomas Yeshua ben Nun Eved Hashem. A few psukim before the end, it says Yeshua died. Mm-hmm. You have the same problem. The answer is to ask Elazar. Okay, so Elazar continued the Sefer. What about though it says Elazar died, the last pasuk? The answer is to ask it Pinchas. Pinchas finished it all. Next, Shmuel Kotzev Sifra. Again, you have the same problem. You're not even halfway through the Sefer. Shmuel passes away. The answer is to ask it God Achoyz of a Nasan Anabi. two of the other Nevi'im of that time, God HaChoza and Nathan HaNavi, who are mentioned in various connections involving David HaMelech, they finished it. Next, David Kosef Sefer Tilim Aydei Asaras Kenim, when we listed the Asaras Kenim before, the question is, V'lechshav Nami Eisan HaEzrachi. Why aren't we counting off Kapitel Pei Tes, Caption, Mach, Gila Eisan HaEzrachi? Why don't we count him? The answer is, Omer Rav, Eisan HaEzrachi Zehu Avraham, because Eisan HaEzrachi is another name for Avraham. How do we know that? Ksiv Hacha Eisan HaEzrachi, here he's described as Eisan HaEzrachi, V'chsiv Hacha Miheir Mimizrach, Tzedek, the Gomer, it says in Yeshaya, it describes Avraham Avinu, it's part of the Torah of Lach Lecha. For that reason, it says who was aroused to come from the east and then bring Tzedek with him. Avraham, meaning, so therefore, Ezrachi is related to the word Mimizrach. And Eson, he's called that because the Ovis in general are called the Esonim, the powerful ones, the strong ones. Yeah. Incidentally, I mean, much of Kapitel
Pei. He was the only one coming through.
Well, he's not, yeah. I mean, the Eben Ezra on those psukim says that actually the Mihei Mimizrach is actually talking about Kodesh. But anyway, let's not get into that. Anyway, though, I mean, a good part of Kapitel Pei Tes talks about that the Eibishter promised the kingship to David, and now look what's happened with it. Obviously, you can't say that David wrote that part unless the Nebuah, I mean, Avraham wrote that part unless the Nebuah. That you would have to say again, that Avraham wrote part of the Kapitel and then David adapted it. Kachoshev Moshe or Kachoshev Haman? Now we have another question on that list. We mentioned Moshe in the list, Tfilah Moshe. We also mentioned Haman. The problem is, V'ha'amar Rav, Haman Zem Moshe. Don't we see that Rav said that Haman is another name for Moshe? How do we know that? Ksiv Hacha Haman, Ksiv Hacha Mechol Beiti Ne'amanu. Because Moshe is described as faithful. Ne'aman, Melosh and Haman, yeah. Haman is actually the Aramaic translation of Ne'aman, yeah. The answer is Tre Haman Havu. Yes, but there were two Hamans. When Rav says Haman's a Moshe, he's referring to Haman who's mentioned in a different pasuk. There's a pasuk that says that Shlomo was wiser than Asen Ezrachi, the Haman, etc. That's referring, the Haman over there means Moshe. Shlomo, in a certain sense, is wiser Shlomo than Moshe. In a certain sense, Shlomo is wiser than Moshe. But the kapitel, that's captioned Maskula Haman Ezrachi, no, that was not written by Moshe, that was written by a different Haman. Now, we said Moshe Kosef Sifrei Parshas Bilam Ve'Iyov. We said Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, and as well as Parshas Bilam, with all the explanations that we said before what Parshas Bilam means, as well as Iyov. So now that's going to bring us into a discussion of Iyov. Messiah Leilu Reb Levi Balachma. This Braisa then supports what Reb Levi Balachma said. Domer Reb Levi Balachma Iyov Bimei Moshe Hoya. He said that Iyov lived in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. How do we know that? Because at one point in one of Iyov's soliloquies, he says, Halavai, would that there were Ephai, somebody to write down my words. He's saying, like, you guys don't understand me, or you're harassing me, or you're saying I deserve what I'm getting, et cetera, et cetera. Halavai, there was somebody to write down my words, and then people would see that I know what I'm talking about. He uses the word Ephai. You have Moshe Rabbeinu uses the same expression. How then will it be known that we're your special people? He says to the Eibishter. So we see that the word Eifoi, not how really. It means kind of like then, you know, like how then are we going to. But the Marsha explains also the word Eifoi, Rashi himself explains it in a few places actually, that the word Eifoi actually stands for Ayepoi. Where is there here such and such? So Eiv is saying, where is there somebody who is going to write down my words? Now we see his words were written down. We have Sefer Iyov. Therefore, we should assume that we're saying that the one who Iyov is pleading that there should be somebody to write down his Sefer, and in the end it was, that would be the one of whom it also says Eifoi, namely Moshe.
How can it be?
Okay. Well, why not?
They didn't live in the same time. Yeah,
according to this, we're saying they did live in the same time. Wait, we're going to get... Yeah. The question is, why? Maybe you can say that Iyov lived in the times of Yitzchak. Just give me Eifoi who atzod tzayid. Yitzchak uses the same expression. Who then is the one who brought me a hunted animal? He says to Esau. Ve'emah b'mei Yaakov, or maybe say that Iyov lived in the time of Yaakov. Just give him king Eifoi zaysasu. He says to his son, if so, then this is what you should do. Bring a present to the Egyptian viceroy. Ve'emah b'mei Yosef, or maybe say he lived in the time of Yosef. Just give Eifoi heimroyim, where Yosef asked, the Malach Gabriel who meets in the field over there, where are my brothers taking care of their sheep? The answer is Lo Sapadaydach. No, but you can't think that way. Dichtiv, because the Pasuk, that same Pasuk in Iyov, where he's saying, Halavai, there's somebody to write down my words, he continues, Mi Yitin Basefa V'yuchoku, would that there was somebody who would put it into a book and they would be inscribed, they would be carved out. Moshe, who did Ikri Mechoket. We find that Moshe is the one who's called the scribe, the one who carves out the words. It says about Shevet God. He saw, he wanted to take the first portion in Eretz Yisrael for himself. Kishom Chelkas Mechoket Sofon, because there is the portion where the Mechoket, Moshe Rabbeinu, is buried. Because Moshe is buried on Har Nevo'ah in the portion of Shevet God. So we see that Moshe is called Mechoket. So therefore, we see that if he's saying Miyitin Basefo B'Yuchaku, it must have been written by the Mechoket Moshe.
Well, the Gemara suggests when they about Befo, and it sounds like it's their Shabbat, but it's suggesting it as if they don't have a tradition. It's just trying to match.
Okay, so the question, right? So the question is why the Gemara is going to bring now a whole bunch of different opinions when Iyov lived. So the question is, how don't we know? So the Ritva says, evidently, Sefer Iyov must have been hidden away for a long time and then eventually rediscovered. By the time they rediscovered it, the Ritva says they may have forgotten when the man lived originally. The Maharal gives a different explanation. He says, look, you look at the framing story of Sefer Iyov. The Gemara is going to discuss that in more detail tomorrow. The Sultan comes and says to the Eibishter, sure, Iyov is a great guy. You gave him all the good things in the world. You'll see, if you take him away from him, you'll see what will happen to him. And he loses his children and his possessions, and he himself is struck with all kinds of terrible illnesses.
Of course, he didn't get his children back.
We'll see that on Tetzayin Amud Beis. You actually, Marsha talks about the possibility that in some other Mefarshim also, not necessarily did his children die. You have the pasuk says that the house fell on the Na'arim. Na'arim doesn't necessarily mean his children. It can mean the servants. His children may have survived and just he didn't know where they were. And eventually he got...
Servants.
Okay, fine. But he got back all of his possessions. As far as his children, yeah. Yeshayimim, that his children died and then he had new ones. Yeshayimim, that it was the same original children and maybe he had more, maybe not. We'll learn on Tetzayin Amud Beis. We'll get into that detail. Anyway. The point is, the Maharal says, what the Chachamim are arguing about this question, when Iyov lived, when would there have been a time in history when the Midas Adin was so powerful that even a good guy like Iyov should be caught up like that and then be given over to the Satan to do with him almost whatever he wants? That's what the Chachamim are arguing. When do we find a time in history when the Midas Adin was so severe?
And when was that?
Well,
when
so that's the different opinions. One is in the times of Moshe, and then we're going to have a half dozen other opinions.
But it's strange that
Kiyotel
Hashem let himself
be
into the
Queen. We'll see. I'm Tazayin Amud Aleph. Yeah, wait. Okay. All right. Rava Omer Iyev Bimei Miraglim Hoya. Rava says that Iyev lived in the time of the Miraglim. Now, the time of the Miraglim is the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. The point is, though, that the opinion he says he lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu can say that he was a Yid. On Amud Beis, we're going to deal with the question, was Iyev a Yid or a Goy? If we say Bimei Moshe, we mean that he was a Yid. If we say Bimei Miraglim, we mean that he was a goy whose chus protected the goyim of Eretz Yisrael. And how do we know that? Ksivacha Ishoya Be'eretz Utz Iyev Shmoy. He's introduced at the beginning of Sefer Iyev. He's a man from Eretz Utz. Uchtivatam Hayesh Ba'etz. We see that Moshe asks the Miraglim. It's an Eder. No, Yeshayim that it's in Turkey. And I'm not saying Turkey. You see, you're the one who just said that. Yeshayim that it's in Eder. Yeah, a number of them, of course, should bring up the possibility based on that, based on the fact that one of his friends is named Eliphaz, who might be the same as Eliphaz, the son of Esau, whatever, on various grounds, a number of Mephoshim say that it may take place in Edom. More or less like southern Jordan, northern Saudi Arabia, that area. So, and you find Moshe when he's sending off the Meraglim, he tells them, look and see if there is a tree there. Eight, similar to Utz. The question is, Midami, Hacha Utz, Hacham Eight. It's two different words, Utz and Eight. The answer is no, because Hacha Kamal of Moshe Yisrael. Because no, you have to understand, Moshe is not asking them literally to see if there are trees in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, he's asking them anyway whether the ground is fertile. Of course, there's going to be trees. He's asking them, Yeshna la'oisa adam sheshnoisa varuchos ke'eit. You have to look and see, does that man who lives as long as a tree, is he still alive? We're going to say later that Iyov lived a long life. And also that he protects his generation like a tree. So therefore, Moshe is asking them, check whether Iyov is still alive. Which means that he's a non-Jew. His chus is protecting them. And in fact, one of the explanations, when the Meraglim come back and say, Eretz Echelet Yeshverhi, we saw mourning and then funerals and all going all over Eretz Yisrael. The Medrash says one possibility that it means, I think the Gemara actually mentions it someplace, that it means Iyov had died. And they're seeing, they're mourning for him all over Israel. But they took it the wrong way. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next. One of the Rabbanon was one time sitting and learning in front of Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni. The Yosef Bikamer, he was sitting and saying as follows. Iyev lehoya vele nivra ela moshel haya. This is what you were saying before. Iyev was not, never existed, never was created. He was a moshel. The whole story is a moshul. Rashi says, in order that you can learn from it, answers to people who complain about the Eibishter's justice, and you can also learn from it in a point the Gemara is going to say later, that a person can't be held responsible for what he says when he's in pain. You find, the Gemara is going to talk about later, Atazayim, the Gemara is going to talk about a number of really negative and even apikursish things that Eiv said in the heat of the debate. But because he was in sire, because he was in pain and suffering, therefore he's not held responsible for it. So that's another thing we learned from
you. You're not responsible to say things like that when you're not.
Yes,
no, I know.
We're saying that the...
No, I understand, but
yeah. Halacha, I don't know. But first of all, especially according to the opinion that Eiv was a goy. But I'll tell you, actually, there is an interesting idea Rashi mentions on the Psukim in Eiv, that towards the end of the Sefer, when the Eibishter finally appears to Eiv and says to him, almost like angrily, like, "Are you talking? What are you doing over here?" So Rashi explains that the Eibishter is telling him, "You know what? I was expecting you to pass this test and not say anything negative, and you would have been on a much higher level." There's actually, I think it's a Zohar that says that if Eiv had not said anything negative, then in davening nowadays, we wouldn't just say Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchok, Elokei Yaakov, we'd also say Elokei Eiv. But he lost that because it's fine. He's not punished for it, but he didn't gain. So Eiv says, "I didn't realize." You know, Eiv says, "I didn't realize." And Eiv says, "You should have been like Avraham Avinu. He didn't know that he's going to end up being that. There's going to be end up being."
I mean, how can a goy?
A goy is also expected to reach a certain
like
level. In his own way, among the goyim, he could have been like Avraham Avinu. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So loy hayuv ledivra ala moshul. There is, by the way, there's a girsa from the Gaonim that says Ela Limashal Haya. The whole purpose, according to this, even he agrees that Eiv was a real, actual, historical person, but according to this, the Gemara is saying, this opinion, that the only reason why the man ever lived in the first place was in order that his story should serve as a mashal for us. Okay. Amalei, sort of Shmuel ben Achmeni says, what are you talking about? The guy was a mashal. Alecha amakra ish haya be'eretz with Eiv Shmai. The pasuk presents it as a very factual thing. There's a man living in the name of Uth named Eiv.
Existed.
Yeah. Okay. So the answer to the question is, so what? What about you have a marshal you have a story that nothing on Navi comes and tells David after the whole story with Bathsheba. He tells him there was a rich person and there was a poor person. The poor person had nothing but one little sheep that he bought it and he kept it and he treated it like a daughter, etc. Mihava, there was no such person, even though it's presented as if it was a factual thing. Ela marshal ba'ama, nothing is giving as a marshal to make David realize what he did. Over here also, you could say, so what? The Pasuk presents it as a factual thing. So what? It could also be a mashal.
Okay. Over there,
the problem is, the question is, im kein shmoi v'shem iroi lama. No, there's a different point. But if that's the case, if it was only meant as a mashal, why does he need a name, and why do we need to identify where he came from?
Right.
In the mashal that Nathan tells David, neither of the protagonists over there are named. It doesn't say where they lived or whatever. Here, where it mentions fact, it gives him a name, Eiv, and it gives it, it's more likely that that's who.
It makes it more dramatic that you would accept it by putting names in.
Okay, but still, if it was meant only as a marshal, then
Rabbi Yechon doesn't need geography.
Yeah. Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar Dami Tavayo. Next, we have another opinion. Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar both say, Eiv me'oleg goylahoya. Eiv was one of the people who came up from out of Golos. Golos Babel, the Pashtas, who based Midrash of Tveriahoya. And according to this opinion, also he was a Yid. His base Midrash existed in the city of Tveria. The Gemara says, "Meister, I have a contradiction." A Braisa says, "You may shnoisiv shal Eiv mishal shenichnas to Yisrael Mitzrayim v'atshayotzu." Eiv lived from when the Jewish people came down to Mitzrayim until they left it, 210 years. But we see also that's long before Golos Babel. The answer is, Ema, no. You have to say what the Braisa means is, "Kimi shal shenichnas to Yisrael Mitzrayim v'atshayotzu." He lived the same length of years as the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, 210 years. Rashi makes the calculation like this. We say at the end of Sefer Eiv that Eiv got everything that he lost back double. He had twice as many cattle, twice as many camels, etc. Also, as far as the children, we'll talk about later on Tazayin Amar Aleph that he had twice as many sons, and the Gemara discussed over there whether he also had twice as many daughters or whether they were just twice as beautiful. Anyway, everything he got back double. The pasuk says, because the Eibishter, we paid him for all of his sorrows. The total amount of time he lived, the pasuk says that after all these events, he lived 140 years. So the implication is before it, he lived 70 years, therefore 210.
Wow.
So therefore, but you can still say what it means is he lived 210 years, but not to say that his lifespan was actually during Golos Mitzrayim, but rather like Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar said that his lifespan was much later during the time of Golos Babel and after. Okay, the Gemara says Mesvi. Okay, but I have yet another contradiction. You're going to tell me that so far you're telling me that this last one anyway. You're telling me that Eiv was a Yid and therefore he had a base Medrash and it was in Tveria. The Braisa says like this: Shiva Nevi'im Nisnabu Umas Arlam. Seven Nevi'im prophesied to the Goyim. Now, the Hora, a Novi who prophesies to the Goyim, presumably we're assuming at this point to the Goyim. We're gonna revisit that soon, but wait, for the moment, this is the exception. The Elohim, Bilam Ba'aviv, there's Bilam and his father, Ba'ur, because you have a general rule, whenever a Navi is mentioned together with his father's name, it means his father was a Navi as well. Bilam is identified in the Torah as B'nai Ba'ur, therefore Ba'ur had to have been a Navi as well. Right. So that's two. The Eov, then you have Eov's friends over there who are in the debate, Eliphaz HaTemoni, who builded the Shochi, the Tzofah Ma'amasi, the Elihu Ben Barach
HaLabuzi. Eliphaz was from Esav, the one?
Many of them, Mephoshim, say it is the same one. Not necessarily, not all of them agree to that, but yeah, there is an opinion. Again, it depends when Eov lived. If he lived in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's plausible. If he lived in the times of Golos Babel, then no. Okay. So those are the seven. The point is, Lahora, all of them are going. Okay, Omale, so he answers him, however, so what? According to your own logic, don't you have to agree that Elihu, at least, out of that list, is a Yid? Now, how do we know that? So Rashi says, first of all, he's called by his name and his father's name. So that shows he has to have been a Yid. Otherwise, there's no reason to identify him by his father's name. Again, because Labdafka, his father was a we're not saying necessarily his father was a Novi, Baracha was not here on the list. To
Elihu
identify
his father?
Elihu is his
name. That's his name.
That's his name. Barachel is his father's name. So therefore, the fact that it identifies him like that, and that not just his name and his father's name, but it also, the Pasuk identifies him as Elihu ben Barachel Habuzi Mimishpachat Rom. So to give that much detail about him, his father's name and his family name and whatever, shows that he must have been a Yid. Second of all, Rashi says, Mishpachat Rom means the family of the exalted one, meaning Avram. Anyway, so at the very least, Elihu has to have been a Yid. L'chora.
The father.
If the father is it, yeah. Elihu ben Barachel, yeah. So at least he on this list has to have been a Yid. V'oksiv mimishpachas Rom. Ella, no, what do you have to say? You have to say that, why is he on this list? Inabri inbi l'umas olam. You have to say, fine, Elihu himself was a Yid, but his nevuah was primarily to the Goyim. Well, hachinami, Eov inabri inbi l'umas olam. So fine, you can also say that Eov gave nevuah to the Goyim, but he himself may have been a Yid.
And Yonah.
Wait. The question is, Otakul and Nevi'im, Milo, Yenabi, Lo, Masa'ilam. Okay, didn't many of the Nevi'im say Nevuah to the Goyim? Yeah, you're mentioning Yonah, but also you have many of the other Nevi'im have whole chapters that are addressed to the Goyim. The answer is, Hosam Iku Nevi'u Sa'il Yisrael. Yes, but their main Nevuah was meant for the Jewish people. Okay, say for Eov, say for Yonah, you're right. Yonah is mostly about Nineveh, but that's only the one Sefer that we have of him. We know from other Pesukim that he gave other Nevuahs to the Jewish people as well. So his primary career as a Navi was to the Jewish people. At one point, the Eibishter also sends him to Nineveh. Here you can say this list of seven is meant, some of them are Jews, some of them are Goyim. Bilam is obviously a Goy. The rest of them, at least Elihu and maybe Eov, can be Jews. But their primary Nevuah is addressed to the Goy, and therefore they all belong in this list.
That makes him a Goy?
But no, that would make him a Yid, in other words. That would mean he's a Yid whose main Nevuah, the Eibishter sent him as a Navi to the Goy, primarily.
Could it be a Goyshev Navi?
It could also be, but you don't have a proof one way or the other. You can't disprove what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar are saying about when he lived based on this Braisa. However, Meitzvi, I have another Braisa which contradicts this. The Braisa says, Chosid Hoyo Ba'umas Ha'olam Ve'Iyev Shmoy. There was a Chosid Umas Ha'olam named Iyev. V'loi Bola Olam Elakadei L'Kabel Schorei. He only came to this world in the first place. The Eibishter only put him in the world in order that he should be Mepabel Schar. Like I was saying before, like Rashi says over there, that the Eibishter expected him to pass the test and then he would be on a very high level. However, Hevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Olav Yisurin, the Eibishter brings on him Yisurin, his Chamachara from Agadef, and he started cursing and reviling the Eibishter, as we will see some of the Pesukim on Tet Zayin that talk about that. Kofla HaKadosh Baruch Hu Schorabo Olam Azeh Kedei L'Torah Dimina Olam Abba. So the Eibishter doubled his reward in this world in order to get him out of Olam Haba. So not that he's not a Navi, but the point is, therefore, he's not a Yid. We're saying he was a Chosid Umas Olam. That the Eibishter said, you know what? Look, if you had lived up to what you were supposed to, you would have a place in Olam Haba. Because you didn't, then you're getting your reward in this world, and that's that. So Marsha explains the detail is a Yid usually a Yid is not expected to get his reward in this world. Hayom lasos umacha little sodom. A goy is supposed to get his reward in this world. Hayom nowadays is when we do our avodah in the future in Olam Haba after a person passes away is when they get their primary reward. Eov, according to this being a chosid umas ha'olam, he had the chance to be like a Yid in that sense, to have a tzchar in Olam Haba. He lost the opportunity, therefore he just gets it in this world like a regular run-of-the-mill goy. The point is, according to that, he's a goy. The answer is Tanoim. It's actually Machlokas Tanoim, whether Yid or not. The Tanya, because now we're going to have more opinions when Yid lived. Rabbi Loza says that Yid lived in the time of the Shoftim. Of the Shoftim, Shanema, because you have a pasuk, Eov says to his friends, "Hein atem kochem chazisem." Look, all of you have seen, v'lam meaning nevuah, v'lam is a hevel to habalu. So why is it? We're going to see later. The Gemara is going to explain later another meaning of chazisem, but whatever. V'lam is a hevel to habalu. Why is this that you're saying hevel, that you're saying nonsense to me? And a zehu dosh kulei hevel. What can be called a generation when all of it is vanity, when all of it is nothing, when even the best people are nothing? Is that heavy yomer zeh dosh al shvoit ashoftim? This is the period when the people were judging their judges. The period that the Megillas Rus begins by hebi mesh shvoit ashoftim. The Gemara says later on in the Amud, it was a period when even the shoftim, even the dayanim themselves, were on a low level. So therefore, that fits with what Eov is telling his friends. Rabbi Shoben Kocha, I mean, you'd be Me'ach HaShverish. Rabbi Shoben Kocha says he lives in the time of HaShverish. Shenema, because at the end over there, when it describes his beautiful daughters, it says, "Well, nimtzam nashim yafet kibnot Eov b'cholaret." They couldn't. There were not to be found women as beautiful as the daughters of Eov throughout the land. Ezel Dosh and Esbachshav and Nashim Yafet. Where do you find the generation where they were looking for all the beautiful women? Heviem is a derish of HaShverish. The question is the aim of Mid David. Why can't you say, according to that logic, that Eov lived in the time of David? Because you have over there at the very beginning of Noshim, you know, Naira, same difference, but that's not the question. At the beginning of Malachim, it describes when David was old, he lost his body heat, so they suggested that they should find a beautiful girl to serve as a companion for David, to help warm him up. Abishai. So they were looking for a Naira Yafa. The answer is Hasan b'chol gvul Yisrael. Yes, but David was looking only within Eretz Yisrael. Hacha b'chol ha'aretz. Here, the pasuk describes that they weren't to be found, and Marsha explains, well, nimso implies that they were looking to find b'chol ha'aretz in the whole land. That can only be Achashverosh. Rav Nosson says that Eov lived during the time of the kingdom of Sheva, the queen of Sheva, who visited Shlomo HaMelech, which we'll talk about later on the Amud. Sheva is a place, I don't know, in Africa, Arabia, whatever, yeah. Because one of the disasters that happened to Eov's possessions is it says that his cattle or his cattle or some kind of animals of his, I forget which one, were taken by Shiva. So therefore you see that there's a connection that it happened in the time of Shiva. Chacham say Eov lived in the time of the Kastim, meaning Nebuchadnezzar and his army. Because another one of the disasters over there is that the Kastim appointed themselves three commanders of their army, and they went and then grabbed all of them and grabbed all the animals. The Yesh Omim Eiv b'mei Yaakov Hoya. Yet another opinion, Yesh Omim is that Eiv lived in the time of Yaakov. V'dina bas Yaakov Nasa. And who did he marry? Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. How do we see that? You have a pasuk where after the first time, after Eov had the first set of, after both sets of disasters, again, first he had his possessions were all taken, then later on he, we'll see the framing story tomorrow, but that's the framing story of Eov, is that the Satan comes and tells the Evishter, look, you know, sure, Eov is a good guy, you gave him everything, let's see if you test him, we'll see what he's made of, and the Evishter tells him, fine, you have permission to do whatever you want with his possessions, so all of his possessions are taken in one disaster after another. And Yeshayim also his children, again, Yeshayim, his children were says his children did survive. The Satan comes back. The Eivishter says, "No, you see that Eov didn't do anything." The Satan says, "Fine, you haven't done anything to his body yet." So the Eivishter tells him, "Fine, you have permission to harm his body as well." So you get these terrible sores and all kinds of terrible things. There's actually a Gemara in Cholin that says that Eov was so badly wounded by this that actually he would have been considered a treifa. He would have been considered somebody who can't normally live beyond 12 months.
Something to see for all these tests.
One reason is in order to test him, the way they have to test
him.
Actually, the Gemara will talk about it later. The Sutton had a good reason for it. You'll see. We'll see tomorrow. But I will tell you also, there is the famous Medrash that says that Eov deserved all this because he was one of Pare's advisors, and he's the one when Pare decided, let's get smart and figure out what to do with those Jews. The Medrash says, Bilam is the one who advised him to enslave them. Yisrael is the one who advised him, don't mess with them, and he ended up running away. And Eov stayed quiet.
Staying quiet.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Like, I mean,
yes.
he got better treatment than Bilam, though.
Yes. Well, okay. All right. So okay. So anyway, so after both sets of disasters, after all his possessions are taken, and he himself is stricken with painful diseases, sores, and whatnot, so his wife tells him enough already, you know, where you may as well just at this point curse the Eibishter and get your life over with. He answers her, "Kedaber achas anavolis daberi." You speak like a degenerate person. And then you have a pasuk that describes when Dinah was raped by Shechem, Kinevola also be Israel, that he did a degenerate thing among the Jewish people. So we see that verbal connection is a reason to say that his wife was Dinah, and therefore that he lived in the time of Yaakov. So, v'chulu tanois v'rolohu di'iv mi'Yisrael haba. It comes out then that all of these tanoim, and also most of the Amoraim, hold that he was a Yid, levar mi'yesh omim, except for this last opinion that he lived in the time of Yaakov. Now, how do we know that? Okay, they're all saying he lived in the time of Ahasuerus, he lived in the time of Malchus Tshuva, etc. How does that prove he was a Yid? Because the because if you were going to think that Yid lived in some later period and was a Goy and was a Nabi, can't be. After Moshe passed away, do we ever find the Shechina resting on a Goy? But we say in a Braisa, Bikish Moshe Shalotish Shechina Alev Dekachavim, Moshe asked the Eibishter that the Shekhinah should no longer rest on Goyish and Nevi'im, and it was given to him. Shenema, as we find, Moshe says, as Moshe says, that I and your people, the Eibishter, should be distinct, should be unique among all the nations, that only we should have the Shekhinah. We should be distinct. Moshe and Pella. So, if Eiv lived in the time of Yaakov, sure, he could be a Goy and be a Nevi. If he lived in the time of Moshe, fine, same thing. But if he lived in the time of Ahasuerus, or the time of Golus Babel, or the time of Shvar, or the Kastim, or what have you, then it's impossible for him to have been a Goy and be another.
Because
the Shekhinah no longer rested on Goyim after Moshe died for that successfully.
So that was taken away before Moshe's death?
So that was taken at Moshe's death. It had to be. Moshe is asking, from now on, there should be the Jewish people have a unique distinction that the Goyim don't have. So fine, as long as Moshe is alive, he himself is a greater Navi than any other. Fine, the Goyim can still have lesser Nevi'im. But once Moshe passes away and the Jewish people themselves are only going to have lesser Nevi'im, there should no longer be even lesser Nevi'im among the Goyim. And that was Niskayim.
Forever.
Yeah. Okay. To be continued, Be'ez Hashem.